Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we explore a new aspect of UFOs or the paranormal. And this week, our guest is Marie Jones. That's Marie D. Jones. And we're going to talk about her book, Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. Now, when I say science, I mean P-S-I-E-N-C-E, science. So it's really a neat play on that word. I love the title. But before I introduce our guest, I just want to give you a little bit of UFO news, because there is some stuff going on. And let's see, what do I have here? Yes, the country of France has opened up a website. They have opened up their UFO files officially and launched a website which has documented sightings over a period of 5 decades. And this actually just opened up, and it's so popular that the website crashed. So this is really exciting news, though, because France is the first country to really, first major country to treat the subject of UFOs open and officially and in a positive manner, and to actually, you know, continue to conduct these investigations. So it's pretty exciting news. And what else do we got going on? Oh, yes. Let me see. The former governor of Arizona has now come out of the closet saying that he was a witness to the UFO Phoenix Lights approximately 10 years ago. And what's really interesting about the Phoenix Lights, for those of you who don't know, is, I think, in my opinion, one of the top 10 UFO events in world history, and involved a very large number of people who saw these lights over Phoenix, Arizona. Thousands of people saw it. The police received thousands of calls. There are no books, of course, written about it. It's a very, very famous sighting. At any rate, former Arizona Governor Fife Symington, F-I-F-E, Symington, has now says that he was a witness to the actual Phoenix lights. Now, you may remember him because when these lights actually appeared 10 years ago, he was one of the people who sort of ridiculed the whole event. He, in a publicity stunt, he trotted out an aide dressed as an alien to spoof the frenzy surrounding these mysterious lights. Now, he says he's convinced that they were actually alien spacecraft. He's a pastry chef and a business consultant. And he says he saw the UFO himself. He says he's a pilot. And he says he knows just about every machine that flies. And he says this is bigger than anything he's ever seen. He says it's still a great mystery to him. And he doesn't know why people continue to ridicule it. It's a very, very interesting development, I think. And it's certainly got a lot of people talking. And let me see, what else do we got going on here? Ah, yes, final piece of interesting news, which I thought was very mysterious, involves a possible UFO crash in Somalia. Now, you don't hear a lot about UFO crashes current, but apparently this is some type of aerial device has fallen in Somalia. An article is written by one of the people who's there, and I'll just quote you a little bit from this article. This mysterious device apparently looks like a satellite or a UFO, and it's been landed near Bulo Verde in a town in South Somalia. Villagers report the device fell 5 days ago in this area, and it's occupying an area of about 100 square meters. Apparently, one of the witnesses, Ilyas Ali, says, in the evening of last Wednesday, this large device flew over our heads, and moments later we heard a large sound, a bam. And he says that in the daylight, this device glitters, and at nighttime it turns light and speaks a strange language which the villagers can't understand. And the impact of the device actually killed a camel which was grazing nearby. So this is just a short little article that has appeared in the UFO updates. So I don't know what to make of it. Maybe we'll hear more, but we will see. Let's now get to our guest, Marie Jones, who who I actually have met years ago, but she's written this book called Science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E, Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. Now, I'm really excited about this because mainstream scientists have really ridiculed paranormal phenomena. They disbelieve in it and really sort of debunk it and ridicule it very much. But now, leading quantum physicists are discovering that science and the supernatural are converging. And that's what this book, Marie Jones' latest book, is all about. It explores the latest theories of multiple universes, hidden dimensions, time travel, energy fields, superstrings, and other quantum field subjects and how they relate to paranormal events. For example, how are UFOs able to appear and disappear and turn at right angles? Could they be using wormholes to travel between universes? Or poltergeists? Could they be the result of fluctuations in the so-called zero-point energy field? We'll hear more about that. And like deja vu, I can't wait to hear about this. Is this proof of the quantum theory of parallel universes? This is what we're going to talk about tonight, how quantum physics relate to UFOs, ghosts, out-of-body experiences, past lives, and all this stuff. Now, our guest, Marie Jones, is the author of Looking for God in All the Wrong Places and more than 30 other inspirational books. Wow, you have been busy, Marie.
Well, like you.
She has written dozens of articles and essays. Her work has appeared in several of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, which are very, very successful and popular, and other anthologies. She is a MUFON field investigator, which is where I met her, actually, like some
way back when, huh?
Yeah, 20 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
A paranormal researcher, a licensed New Thought metaphysics minister, a counselor, you have a long list of achievements here, an award-winning video producer, a screenwriter, a political activist, a book reviewer, and now an up-and-coming quantum physicist with this new book. Wow. So you currently live in San Marcos with your husband, son, and assorted pets, and you have a website here, which is actually your name, MarieDJones.com.
Right.
So, Marie, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's been a while,
huh? Nice to talk to you again after all those years, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where we met, was those MUFON meetings.
Yeah.
And there were just, what, 10, 12 of us?
Yeah, well, yeah, and then later on we got some pretty big crowds going. It took a while, though, but there was a core group of us that really kind of stuck it out.
And that's true, yeah. That's,
yeah.
We started investigating our first UFO cases there.
Right, and eventually I went to San Diego and formed a group there and started writing, as you did.
Right.
I've been following your books, and
right.
It seems like sort of a natural progression for researchers to start writing books.
I think so. I mean, at least I would wish that more researchers would do it because there's so much information out there that just people are just sitting on, I think.
I think it's getting easier, too, because there's a lot more publishers that are looking for that kind of stuff because they know it has an audience.
Yeah, and with the Internet now and, you know, on, or what do they call it, imprint publishing or on-demand.
I think that there are more books than ever on the paranormal. And now with, you've got a lot of radio shows and podcasts that are real open to that subject matter. So it's making it a lot easier for people to get their information out there.
Right. So Marie, how did you ever get involved, before even going to MUFON all those years ago, and that was like the late 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you get interested in paranormal phenomena?
I've been interested since I was a kid. I just was always one of those weird kids that saw things and, had a very overactive imagination, and I read voraciously, and I was always really aware of some other level of reality that was sort of alongside our own, and I really stuck with it, throughout my life. I think a lot of kids are open to that kind of stuff, but they sort of get it knocked out of them as they get older. They get conditioned to society, but I just really stuck with it, and I got into the occult when I was a teenager, like a lot of teenagers do, and then into the paranormal and UFOs, and then I ended up getting really heavily into metaphysics, and from there into quantum physics and, theoretical physics. Mm-hmm. I'm not a physicist, but I really about 10 years ago, just started reading everything I could get my hands on.
Right. Oh, from your book, it really shows. Which the book, I mean, first of all, I have to tell you, it's very, very well written. I laughed so hard. I mean, it was so funny and it's so entertaining and so educational.
Well, you know, when you've got all that real technical stuff, you're trying to convey in a way that people will get it and not have a headache when they finish reading. You know, I always find throwing in some humor really helps.
Yeah, well, it worked. Let me tell you,
it was
delightful to read.
Thank you.
Not at all dry, and really, I mean, just amazing how you tied, I think, together your journey from, I guess, starting with the paranormal all the way to the quantum physics, which is kind of how it's written.
Well, yeah, and exactly, and the connections were there for me to see as I went along, you know, and then at this point in my life, I was able to look back and say, you know, things have always been connected. Why have we not seen this? And there are more and more people talking about it. Obviously, you've got, you know, the movie What the Bleep Do We Know and The Secret and all the books that are getting a little into the quantum physics and consciousness areas of research. But, you know, when you look back on your own research, as you probably have many times, you see patterns that obviously were not visible to you while you were in the thick of things.
Right, right.
And then you're able to finally get them down on paper.
Wow. So what was the first stuff you started writing?
In terms of this book?
Well, I mean, no, in terms of as a writer, because you've written, 30 books? That's amazing.
Yeah, I've authored and co-authored over 30 inspirational books for a company called Publications International. I kind of consider myself a staff writer, and these are the kind of books that you'll see in, like, Hallmark shops or Costco or Target, and they're gift books. And those are very light and inspirational. I also wrote a lot of articles for magazines, with a little bit of a paranormal bent. And I really got heavily into metaphysics when I wrote my first book, my first, you know, strictly nonfiction book, Looking for God in All the Wrong Places, which is sort of a humorous social commentary, I guess you could call it.
Okay.
But I always knew I was going to do something connecting my love of the paranormal and my love of what I was discovering in quantum physics. And when I set out to do this book, there really wasn't that much out there. There were a few books that were sort of introducing the idea, but I really felt like, you know, little lay people like me who weren't scientists needed something that could really bring it all together that didn't get too technical.
Right.
That's why you won't see, well, there might be an equation or two in the book, but I really tried to avoid that. I mean, nobody understands those equations.
No, it was great because, you know, I've always shied away from that kind of super strings and stuff. It's very hard to understand.
It is. And when you read a book written by a physicist, they think they're doing a good job of, you know, writing to your education level. But a lot of times I found myself just closing the books and saying, I don't understand this.
Right.
And it was, you know, it's funny thing is it was guys like Michio Kaku and Brian Greene, Fabric of the Cosmos and The Elegant Universe, even though there are technical aspects to those books that really hurt my head, they also have this wonderful writing style where they do help you get it. And so I really tried to aim for that.
Right.
Michio Kaku, his book Parallel Worlds and Hyperspace, I mean, those are books that anybody can understand.
Well, that's what's neat about your book is you boldly tell your own personal paranormal experiences, which I think helps tie together what you're trying to get across. So
exactly, because that's when you have the realizations that there's something to all this. When you look at what's happened to you and to people you know, and you're able to see those little connections.
Right, because that's exactly how I started. I mean, I realized suddenly, I think it was in the late 1980s, that my friends and family were having a wide variety of paranormal experiences.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh, this can't be real. So I read everything I could. I'm like, well, I'm not convinced. So I went and sort of pursued these experiences myself. So I've seen the UFOs and I've seen ghosts, but let's hear one of your ghost encounters.
I've not had a whole lot, but probably the most prominent. I had a poltergeist encounter as a teenager.
Yeah, that's
a friend of mine. She was actually one of my best friends in junior high school. Her family was being tormented by a poltergeist, and she didn't tell me this for a while. We were friends for a while before she, you know, revealed it. I mean, it's not the kind of thing you say to someone upon first meeting them. But she used to always want me to go stay the night at her house, and I was terrified. But after a while, you can't keep saying no. And I did, and I have to tell you, I mean, I did not sleep. I remember I had to go to the bathroom so bad, but I would not leave the room and go down the hall. They were having experiences with something that was throwing clothespins and red eyes that would appear in the dark hallway at night and things moving and slamming around. Now, I didn't hear or see anything that night, but then again, I stayed in the bedroom. I did not venture out till morning. But the next day, we were sitting in her family room. We were watching a movie, and we were just sitting there. I was sitting on the floor. She was sitting behind me on the couch with her feet up, and the windows were closed. There was no air conditioning, no fans, and I felt just something move across me, and, everything stood on end, every hair on my body, and my girlfriend, I didn't even say anything, and she said, "Did you feel that? Could you feel that?" And I hadn't said a word. And, I don't know if that's proof that there was something there, but I do know that...
it's corroboration.
They did leave the house. Apparently, whoever bought the house after they did had it raised literally to the ground and built a new house, and I don't know why.
But, we can guess.
Yeah, but my girlfriend continued to have experiences, not poltergeist experiences, but she saw her father appear at the foot of her bed while he was on a cruise with her mother, and an hour later got a phone call that he had died of a heart attack on the cruise, things like that.
Right.
So it just, I believe that people attract paranormal experiences. They may be more open to it than others. And sometimes I think you probably have found this out when you research a case. Someone seems to have multiple experiences, or maybe their family has had multiple experiences, almost like it's contagious.
Right. Well, what I find so fascinating about this, in your particular journey, is how this introduced you to the idea of the invisible worlds, and then you moved from there to UFOs, and all this is beginning to build this puzzle together.
So
first, these ghosts come, and there's the idea of other dimensions, and then you become a UFO investigator. So what was it like being a UFO investigator?
You know what's weird is that the earliest childhood memories I have of what I thought I saw were UFOs. But I don't think I ever really saw anything. I don't. That's kind of hard to explain. But I remember being maybe 5 years old and looking. I was standing in my driveway of my home in New York, looking towards my garage. There's a back window at the end of the garage, and I swear to this day that I saw a little gray alien looking back at me. And I ran across the street to the neighbor's house. Now, all these years later, I'm 45 years old, so 40 years later, I look at that and I think, well, was that a dream? Was that just one of those intense dreams? But every detail of that experience is seared into my memory. And then there were times growing up that I just was always fascinated with UFOs.
Huh.
But later, after I got into the occult and then into the paranormal, it was just a natural progression because in 1977, Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out, and I was a teenager.
Right.
And it was like, wow. And I was one of those people that went to see J. Allen Hynek talk. He came and did a tour, and there were, 8,000 people in this hall, and my dad and I went, and I stood there, and I was just shaking, just thinking, this is so cool. And that really kind of triggered getting into researching UFOs. And then later, I discovered KUFOs and then MUFON and got into those. And
right. You investigated several big cases yourself, right?
I did a lot here in San Diego. Nothing that I could tell you that ever, was ever provable. One that was provable as a hoax that was really interesting here in San Diego. I believe it was about 1997. But there were a couple of, I was pretty active, as you were, in MUFON. At the time that the abduction scenario was really becoming hot, was getting introduced to the forefront.
Right, like 1988.
And right, when Yvonne Smith was just getting into it, Michael Lindemann and things like that.
Right.
And I remember working with some people who claimed that they had been abducted, and that was really exciting because this was before it was all over the news and the media and in the movies. And a couple of the people, including someone who became a very good friend of mine, were very convincing. And there were other people that I interviewed and that I looked into that I just absolutely knew were after getting attention. So it was a really exciting time, to get involved in it. It was sort of just when the abduction stuff was really becoming real viable and everybody was getting into it.
Right. Well, it's a very, very volatile subject.
What's really interesting to me now is that it seems like we go through these dips where we don't hear a whole lot out there in the media, And now, all of a sudden, we've got, you know, France opening up the records. And I was one of the people that tried to get onto that crash website. and then we had the O'Hare stuff a while back, and now the Fife, you know, admitting. And I can see why when he was governor, he could not be open about his beliefs.
Right.
Well, he waited till now, you know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, I mean, we had, we need more people. What's her name? Councilwoman Frances Barlow, I think.
Right.
She went public, and she suffered horrendously.
Yeah.
But if we had more people doing it all at once, and the police were lying about the number of calls they
received.
Absolutely. So.
But I think, I don't know, maybe you disagree with me, but I get the sense it's getting a little more acceptable.
I think so.
Don't you think? And I'm thinking it might be because of this, the fact that we've got so many TV shows and cable shows, you know, Supernatural and Ghost Whisperer and yada, 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 and all of these Discovery specials and History Channel specials on UFOs, and it just seems to be such an accepted topic now.
Right. Well, it's edging towards mainstream science.
It is.
With books like yours, which are helping the whole situation.
Yeah,
tremendously.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely getting better. And like you said, a lot of scientists are starting to say, hey, there's something to this. We can't deny it. Let's instead find out what it is.
Right. So let's get back to the subject of your book. How do UFOs and ghosts and paranormal phenomena relate to quantum physics?
Well, if you look at quantum physics, it's really all about the behavior of energy and matter at the most minute level. And there's so many bizarre things that happen at the quantum level that becomes much more paranormal than the paranormal. You've got things like, you know, non-locality. Particles are connected on a level beyond space and time. Entanglement, where once the particle is in contact with another, it remains so, even across, you know, vast distances of space and time, and they can affect each other instantaneously.
Right. Now, is that Bell's theorem?
Right.
Now, I have to tell you the story about Bell's theorem. Do you know who Jack Sarfati is?
No.
He's a physicist, a quantum physicist. And I wrote this article about people who have received phone calls, and I know how this is going to sound, from UFOs or aliens.
Seriously? Oh, you've got to get that to me.
I'll email it to you.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was actually published in Fate magazine, and I found like 10 or 20 cases of, you know, people who've had very unusual phone calls in relation to their UFO encounters.
Amazing.
And Jack Sarfati is this physicist, and he says as a kid he received a series of phone calls which claimed to be from a UFO, whoever was calling him.
Oh, my gosh.
And was telling him all this stuff about physics. And what's funny is he somehow completely lost his memory of these phone calls.
Uh-huh.
And it was his mom who remembered.
Oh,
and she answered the phone one day and demanded that these people stop calling her son.
And he went on to become a physicist.
Right.
Well, I'm going to tell you something I've never told anybody before.
Uh-oh.
I've never told anyone. When I was in MUFON in San Diego, one of the reasons why we disbanded, the gal and I that started the MUFON North County chapter, we were getting phone calls from a guy that sounded like a robot. I mean, it sounded like a mechanical voice.
Right.
And it freaked us out because and I've never told anybody about this because it just sounds so bizarre. But based on what you just told me, I'm not saying that we were getting calls from UFOs, but we used to laugh to each other and say, that guy's not human. He would scare us. He knew things about us. He knew cases that we were working on that we hadn't, you know, details that we hadn't talked about.
Right.
And I admit it was because of that she and I said, you know what, the hell with this.
Well,
this is creepy. I've never revealed that because I thought it was just ridiculous.
Right. You know, but I'm finding out, you know, I'm getting a lot of calls from people who have experiences that this is very common. And John Keel, he's a researcher.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
He's, I think, one of the people who first discovered this.
And, I mean, do you think it could also be sort of the Men in Black phenomena, that you're getting contacted by these, you know, these people that everyone who's seen them, they don't look human.
Right.
Nor do they. They talk in a very stilted, mechanical manner, and that's exactly what this guy sounded like.
Well, that's the whole mystery about Men in Black. Are they aliens, or aren't they?
Yeah, mutants. But that's so strange that you brought that up, because I thought about that and I thought, oh, I'm gonna mention it, because I've never said anything, and who knows, maybe somebody out there will say that's happened to me.
Right. You know, so I'm thinking, I've not gotten any particular calls like that, but I've had some strange phone problems, no doubt.
Oh yeah, that happened a lot when we were running the MUFON chapter here. Yeah, it was very strange, and I know the person's name. I won't reveal it. But the person gave a name, and at the time, had the internet been really hot, I probably could have Googled and maybe found out more about it. But it was so strange, because I'm not a person who scares easily at all, and yet his mannerisms and what he was able to tell us was very frightening.
You know, I told another guy about this, and he's been having a lot of abduction experiences, and he told me, I can't believe you're telling me this, because he had a cell phone. And he was driving along, and it rang, and the readout said no known number, or something
right,
like that.
Right.
And he answered it, and it was all these weird computer tones, and he hung up, and then it rang again, and he answered it, and it said, the time is near. Someone told him that. And shortly later, he was abducted.
Oh, see, now, if I had gotten a phone call like that, I never would have answered my cell phone again.
Yeah,
oh,
I don't know, it's just interesting that this ties into the whole subject of how these invisible dimensions are affecting our own, because they affect through all these different devices, through electromagnetics, through cell phones,
right,
you can stop
right,
cars.
Absolutely. I think everything that we do, we're manipulating or altering, you know, our own electromagnetic fields. And if these parallel universes or even these other dimensions are present right alongside ours, it seems very obvious when you look at paranormal events that there is some crosstalk going on. Well, ghosts, I think, are the primary example of energy that's able to move from one dimension to another. The way that a lot of ghosts appear and disappear, and almost the appearance that they have of like a projection or a hologram, and even a lot of UFO cases that you hear about where something will appear and disappear instantaneously rather than sort of shoot off into the distance. And a lot of people have reported UFOs that look like actual projections.
Right.
So, you know, the more you look at all this stuff, and Jacques Vallée, I mean, he really believed that UFOs were more interdimensional than intergalactic, and had a lot of good evidence to back it up.
Absolutely. I mean, UFOs transform shape as well.
Right, transforming shape. And that's not to say that every UFO is interdimensional. I think that there are a lot of different things going on all at once. But I do think that the interdimensional and parallel universe theories can explain a lot of what goes on.
Well, it is confusing, because I'm absolutely convinced that ETs, at least some of them, are biological beings, you know, who fly around craft and live on planets and are very much like us, but different. I think the main difference is that their technology allows them to travel between these dimensions, and they have a vaster understanding.
Right. And the funny thing is that, you know, they don't have to be that much more advanced than us to be able to do that. The way that our knowledge of technology, you know, sort of doubles and triples every few years, I can only imagine what we're going to be capable of doing in 100 years.
Right.
Even if they're 1,000 or 10,000 years ahead of us, they could have figured out faster than light travel. They could have figured out how to tap into this zero-point field of unlimited energy in it that defies gravity and can get them from one point in the universe to another in record time.
Right.
We have not gotten there yet. We're kind of inching along slowly, but all it would take is just a little bit of an advanced technology to be able to figure out some of these techniques.
Yeah, I think, well, maybe the UFOs have given us some. You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight is Marie D. Jones, and she's written this amazing book called Science. That's P-S-I-E-N-C-E, Science. How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. Now, you have a website.
Right. It's www.mariedjones.com. And I'm also on MySpace, just Marie D. Jones. And I have a blog that I don't often get around to blogging on, but it's science.blogspot.com. I just haven't gotten into the blog thing. I keep forgetting that it's there.
Blogs are getting more and more popular, so
they are,
better keep that up.
I know it, I know it. And, you know, there are some great UFO blogs. Nick Redfern's got a great one, UFO Mystic. And it's really, I mean, I go there to get my news on what's going on in the UFO world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. I didn't know about that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, your book, I saw it in the bookstore, actually, and it looks great. Got all sorts of neat charts and stuff. So what I wanted to ask you is, can you explain what zero-point field energy is and string theory and some of this stuff to us? Because I'm not even really sure what zero-point field is.
Well, the zero-point field, I'll try to put it as basically as I can, it's considered a vast, regenerating sort of ground state of energy that permeates the universe. And for a long time, we thought that empty space was really empty. And a lot of physicists have discovered that it's not. There is a sea of energy, like we're swimming in, like fish swim in the ocean,
right,
where particles kind of pop in and out of existence. And because no quantum particle can ever be completely at rest, there's this little tiny electromagnetic fluctuation, or they call it jiggle. And it's the closest they can get to the state of absolute zero momentum. That's why they call it the zero-point field.
Okay.
And Hal Puthoff is probably the granddaddy of the study of zero-point field. And he calls it the grand ground state of the universe.
So it's sort of like the universe at rest.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of studies that are being done now that Hal's doing himself aerospace industry has gotten in on it, and so has the government, of course. They're looking at the idea that this energy, it could be a possible fuel source for us to one day, you know, rocket off to some distant point in the universe, or to possibly also use as a cheap source of fuel in our homes, if we can learn how to tap into the field. You know, how do we extract the energy? Right now, we only are able to extract a teeny tiny bit, and Hal Puthoff will tell you it's enough to make a butterfly's wings flutter. But if we could figure out a better way to tap into this stuff, we might actually be able to use it as a source of fuel.
Which is presumably
what they're doing.
Right.
Exactly. So you look at things like UFOs and you think, well, okay, if they're a little bit ahead of us, they may have already figured out that extraction technique.
Well, we can actually pretty much conclude that they are using interdimensional techniques because of the way they move, right?
Exactly.
At right angles, and they turn invisible and so on.
Defying gravity in the zero-point field, you know, gravity just doesn't matter. But the really cool thing is that the zero-point field could also be a repository of every past, present, and future thought, intention, behavior of, I mean, just everything. If it's the grand ground state of all that there is in the universe, that would include the landscape of past, present, and future.
Wow.
And so a lot of, you know, theoretical physicists are kind of going into the metaphysical realm a little bit and saying, well, maybe this is the Akashic Records that Edgar Cayce was talking about, the book of life that we could tap into, that psychics and clairvoyance can tap into.
Wow, isn't that fascinating that all these parallels are coming up?
Exactly, and ghosts. Can ghosts be using the zero-point field as a means of getting from one reality level to another? Is the Bermuda Triangle a vortice that takes, you know, these ships and craft out of our level of reality on Earth, maybe into the zero-point field and send them somewhere? I mean, it's sort of, you can almost apply the zero-point field to just about any aspect of the paranormal.
Right.
I think the most fascinating being psi abilities, because if it is a field or a repository of everything that ever was and everything that ever will be, it would make sense that a person who can see the future, like Edgar Cayce or Nostradamus or whoever, may be finding a way to tap into the zero-point field and see that landscape of time. We think of time as linear, but if they're in that landscape, they're going to be able to access the future and come back and tell us what they saw. And it also allows for time travel.
Right.
So it's, again, right now it's theoretical, although we actually do know that it exists. We're only able to extract in teeny tiny amounts. But the potential is amazing, and this is coming from the physicists that are studying it, not me. You know, not me, the person who's fascinated with it. And I would highly recommend people read a book by Lynn McTaggart called The Field, The Quest for the Secret Force in the Universe. It's a wonderful introduction into the zero-point field and all of the research that's being done, including research into healing and health and how it could affect our bodies.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This is all really good news. I think all the paranormal and UFO researchers are kind of really excited about what's happening in quantum physics.
And I think it's a really neat segue from the paranormal into science that we haven't had before. You know, it's like we lived on two different sides of the fence, but now we've got this common bond that we can explore. And a lot of it's really neat to see a lot of paranormal investigative groups getting more scientific in their methods.
Right.
And it's also really neat to see a lot of theoretical physicists and quantum physicists writing books like Dean Radin, you know, Entangled Minds, and talking about the stuff that to the guy on the outside sounds really metaphysical, really paranormal.
So now, string theory. So atoms are the smallest thing of the universe, but apparently they're not.
Well, the problem with string theory is that when I was writing the book, it was really hot. And then after I turned the book in, and, you know, now I still kind of keep up on what's going on, it's kind of falling out of favor as a sort of theory of everything. But originally, the idea was that the most fundamental particle was a little teeny tiny vibrating string. And that, you know, the zero-point field could be just a sea of these little vibrating strings, and some are open and some are looped, and they break off and create more strings.
Okay.
The problem with string theory that arose was that you needed, in order to mathematically make it work, and I don't understand the math, I'm just, you know, parroting what I've read over and over again, that in order for these guys to make the math work, because that is so important to physicists, it required extra dimensions. And every time they expanded the theory, they had to add a new dimension. I think now they're up to 11 or 12.
Which doesn't really surprise me. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's many, many more dimensions. At least according
to
Eastern theory, you know, the Eastern Buddhists and all that.
Absolutely.
They say there's 40-some dimensions.
I mean, I think, you know, there's the holographic universe theory that's really being researched and heavily promoted as a possible unified theory of everything. That states that we, our reality could be nothing more than a three-dimensional projection from a higher-dimensional source. We're, you know, our brains are only trained to see three dimensions. If somehow somebody were to come along and show you a fifth or sixth spatial dimension, an object, and what it would look like, I mean, your brain actually has to create, you know, dendrites and make the synaptic connections in order to embrace that image. But once it does, you accept it as a reality.
Right.
So eventually, I mean, there are people that are doing these animated things on the internet to try to envision what a fifth spatial dimension object might look like.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I'm really fascinated in this stuff because I sent you my book, Out of Body Experiences.
Yes, I loved it.
I loved it. Oh,
and see, to me, you could have been floating around the zero-point field.
That's why I just love this conversation we're having, because when we're talking about other dimensions, I'm not only convinced, and in my mind, I know that this stuff is real.
Well, exactly. I mean, you had a lot of experiences where it was very, you know, in your face. I mean, how do you deny that?
Right. It's what I find fascinating is each successive dimension you go, you get more freedom of movement. I mean, like, here, there are three dimensions, basically, on the physical plane.
Right.
Perhaps four, if you want to count time, right?
Exactly.
But when you go up into the astral planes, you have new powers. You can fly, and you can actually interpenetrate objects, and which I'm not sure if that's a new dimension or not, but you can increase your size and decrease your size, and that seems to me, if you do that,
you're messing with your dimensions.
Right. And definitely you can bounce around in time, because every time I've come back from one of these astral trips, I have a precognitive dream, or I'll have deja vu that is so incredibly powerful. It is like walking into a dream and suddenly realizing that physical reality is really much more dreamlike than people realize, and we create it to a certain degree at least. Which comes around again to quantum physics and the Heisenberg principle, is that what it's called?
Yes, and I mean the idea is that we are co-creators. The act of observation has something to do with the outcome of a quantum physics experiment. And because of that, you can't, when it comes to particles, there's really no such thing. Particles are both a wave and a particle.
A wave
called the wave-particle duality. And the Heisenberg uncertainty principle states that you can't know an object's position, you can't know a particle's position accurately without compromising knowledge of its momentum. Because the minute you know its position, it loses its momentum. So you can't know both. The wave becomes a particle when you observe it. You collapse the wave function when you observe it, and it becomes a fixed or positioned particle.
So basically, quantum physics has proved telekinesis.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, if you take that a little step further, well, what's going on before you observe it? Everything is in a state of superposition where all potential possibilities exist. Now, your act of observation is what kind of slams the door on all other realities and makes you focus on just that one. But what if there's a way that your consciousness can kind of override that wave particle, you know, can override collapsing the wave function and see everything in a state of superposition and actually choose which wave function you're going to collapse? I mean, now we're getting into metaphysics, but there are physicists like David Bohm who really believed that there were these different levels and orders of reality where, you know, we could perceive the structure in different ways.
Right. Well, you gave a little bit example of this in your book. You were having a meditation where suddenly you opened your eyes, and well, maybe you can describe it better than I can.
Yeah, it was one of the low points of my life. I was in L.A. and unemployed, which I rarely ever am, and I was really depressed. And I talked to my dad, who's a geophysicist. Well, we talk about all this stuff. And we had talked earlier in the day about light and, you know, physics and light and how everything is made of different vibrations of light, yada, yada, yada. And I guess I was storing that information in my brain because I did a meditation. I really needed to calm down. And I went really, really deep. And for some reason, which I never do, I opened my eyes in the middle of a meditation. And everything in my bedroom was light. I couldn't see any physical formed solid objects. But what I did notice is that certain things vibrated at a higher or lower density of light. You know, the bed, for example, vibrated at a very low level of whatever. The window where the sunlight was coming in, of course, was vibrating very quick and was very bright. And it took, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 seconds before I got my vision, quote-unquote, back, and everything took form.
Right.
And, it, you know, it kind of freaked me out. I didn't even think about it at the time, but later when I was reading about the wave-particle duality and collapsing the wave function, it just, you know, it's like, well, you could have had a V8 where you slap your forehead on your hand. I was like, well, I wonder if that's what happened to me.
You know, I love that story because something very, very similar happened to me. I was with a friend, actually, and we were just talking metaphysics, and she's this amazing lady who's had all these experiences with aliens and a near-death experience and ghosts and you name it, and just vibrates at a very, very high rate. I don't know how else to describe it, really.
Right.
But I was just sitting very close to her, and we were talking, and I was just feeling so much energy that I had to get up and go out onto my balcony. And so we went out onto the balcony, which overlooks actually the L.A. River, and I thought my vision was something was terribly wrong because the entire world was glowing with light and just ribbons of light and purple, bluish, white light was everywhere. And all matter had sort of turned into energy, I guess.
Yeah.
And I kept rubbing my eyes, thinking, oh, I finally complained to her. I'm like, I can't see.
I'm going blind.
And she's like, no, that's the, she had a word for it, the, you know, the astral plane or whatever, which I think is what it is, actually. Because this is not the real world. The astral world is much, vibrates at a higher rate, but it's much more real there.
I'll tell you, I you know, every day I said to myself, when am I going to wake up? Because I think for people like us, don't we feel like a day-to-day life, we're not, it's not the reality, it's not real. It's like you're walking through a dream. And when you have those moments, as you did on that balcony, that's when you feel awake. Like, yeah. Wait a minute, there's something else going on here. Uh-huh.
It's true. And when I have a dream which comes true,
yeah.
Ironically, that's what's so funny is I'll have the dream in the dream state, right? And then I'll come back and to the real world, and the dream starts playing out in front of you. And then that's when you have your wake-up moment, and
right.
It's sort of like becoming lucid in a dream, but you're already awake.
You're awake. That's almost like deja vu, like you're having memories of something that you dreamed about, but they're happening now.
Right.
Yeah.
I think deja vu is actually what happens is people are going out of their body each night, and they're exploring these parallel universes. And the
I believe that too. I think deja vu is you know, you're getting a glimpse of yourself in another universe or in another level of reality, but people tend to cut it off really quick. You have deja vu and it maybe lasts a couple of seconds.
Right.
You know, but if you can extend that and kind of go with it, it becomes a very bizarre experience. I mean, you literally are remembering things that you're doing in the present, and that shouldn't make any sense. If you're remembering something, it should be something you did in the past. But the feeling of deja vu is, this has happened to me now. I know exactly what's going to happen next. Because, you know, it's just that feeling that it's happening to you somewhere else at the same time.
Right.
And I think dreams can probably apply to that as well. I mean, they always say that dreams are our subconscious trying to work out its kinks. I don't believe that.
That's the lowest level.
Yeah, I believe that people have dreams where they're actually accessing other levels of reality. And I mean, you know, the ancient shamans talked about this and worked with it to heal people and to get information from the other side. And
Right. Well, according to the Tibetan Buddhists who use lucid dreaming to achieve enlightenment, what you do is you become lucid in the dream state. And once you're able to basically control the dream very, very well,
right,
these abilities start to translate into the waking state. So where you start to have these super abilities, such as invisibility or levitation or out-of-body travel or precognition, and which isn't really paranormal at all. It's just, you know, becoming fully human.
I think, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's stuff that we're all capable of doing and tapping into if we had the consciousness to do it and the willingness. I mean, a lot of people, I think, are so frightened by it, they just shut off their own gifts.
Right, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. But, it, you know, in lucid dreaming, what's interesting is how, you know, you'll have a lucid dream, but you have so little control. And like you said, it takes practice to actually get to the point where you can really work through the dream and do what you want and make happen what you want to have happen. It actually takes practice.
Well, this is what's so interesting about the whole idea of quantum physics and you affect your reality or you make your reality, you create your reality with your mind. So it all comes down to your mind, ultimately, right?
I agree. I think it's all our, you know, what is the connection between our consciousness and what we're seeing as reality? Obviously, it's a huge connection. I mean, we are thinking everything into being.
Well, now, here's where I get confused, because Jacques Vallée, Jerome Clark, Lauren Coleman, others, and Ruffel, I think, have taken this phenomena of UFOs and say that it's not aliens, necessarily. Not all of them, necessarily, but that it's wearing different masks according to human consciousness.
That's something that I really kind of got into. And, you know, mythology and
right. Comparative
religion talks a lot about that, too, that we create archetypes that change with culture and with cultural beliefs. And I think that that's probably true of a lot of UFO cases. But I also think there are the real nuts and bolts things out there.
You know,
because there's just been too many sightings and too many reports of them.
What's fascinating about all these different, I mean, there's fairies and elves, right? We have
Luke Redfern came up with a great way of getting you to understand what was going on. That, you know, during the era of like the 50s and the 40s, especially in England, the fairies and elves were the entities that people reported seeing. And that transformed into the contactees, you know, the tall blondes with the flowing hair.
Right.
And then that transformed into the Grays. And you know, what's next? Do we have these little black-eyed children that we're hearing about that show up at people's doors because we're living in kind of sinister times? You know, what is the next archetype?
Right. Well, you know, what's fascinating is there. It could be that this phenomenon, it is one phenomenon that is wearing different masks. I don't think it is, personally. I'm pretty convinced that the aliens are the aliens, and Bigfoot is Bigfoot. And honestly, people are still seeing elves, although it's, you just don't hear nearly as much about it.
Right, and in England and some of the old villages where they still are not, you know, have not been culturally corrupted by modern media, yeah,
right.
You still get fairy reports.
And and there's other phenomena, like werewolves. People are seeing werewolves. They've seen them for centuries. It's very rare, but now there's an upsurgence because of the research of Linda Godfrey.
And chupacabras on the rise, too. I mean, cryptozoological creatures are really fascinating. I don't know a whole lot about them, but it seems like the sightings are on the increase all over the world. So what does that tell us about maybe the state of our consciousness? Or is it just some outside thing that happens to be occurring to us? And I, like you, think that there is a lot of different things going on. I think that there are real nuts and bolts ships, you know, craft that people are seeing. I also believe there's interdimensional stuff going on.
It's very confusing because, I mean, you look at some of the religious miracles and their parallels to UFO events are undeniable. The Fatima incident.
Oh, absolutely. And, everybody knows about the classic chariots that Ezekiel saw and,
right.
You know, the Egyptian figures wearing the little helmets and I think there's been stuff going on forever, and what's happening is maybe our consciousness is shifting it a little bit.
You know, it's all very confusing. I think that there probably are angels. I think there probably elves, and I know people are still seeing friendly, contacty, you know, type aliens, human-looking aliens. I think perhaps this is just a theory that humanity is evolving. We're raising our vibration, or maybe the Earth is, or the veil between
right.
the dimensions is getting thinner, or whatever the reason is. We're becoming aware of all these different dimensions, finally.
Yeah, I think that there is. Everybody talks about a quickening that's going on, and I think it definitely, there are places on the Earth where the veil is much thinner than others, or where it doesn't even exist. And I think that there are people that are more open to these experiences and maybe even attract them, whereas others don't. And that's why you hear such a wide range and a wide variety of things that are going on.
Right. So your book, Science, how long did it take you to write this book?
It took me 5 months to write it, but I had been reading and researching it for a long time beforehand. So when I set out to write it, I knew exactly what books to go to, who I wanted to talk to, and the direction I wanted to take. I just had to really jam it out. That was the time frame I was given.
Well,
really helps to know ahead of time what you want to write about.
Right.
I mean, as you know.
Yeah. It's a great title. How did you come up with that title?
I actually called it Beyond the Door. And I had used the term science in my proposal. I said, I want to explore the science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E, science of the supernatural. And my publisher, who, you know, great guy, Michael Pye, had the good sense to say, that's the title. That word is fantastic. And I kind of fought him a little bit. I said, well, how do you pronounce it? You know, how am I going to say it to people? But people love it. It's a great play on words. It's the science of, you know, of psi.
Yeah, it gets a way to talk about the title, you know,
exactly.
And make sure people remember it.
Yeah. It's just I've had people pronounce it in so many different ways. It's amazing.
It's very, very interesting. You've got some nice, what do they call it, blurbs on the back cover from Jim Mars.
Yeah.
Wow.
Josh Warren, Nick Redfern was wonderful. He's so generous. Jeff Ballinger and... Who else? Oh, Pavel Mikulowski, who is working with What the Bleep Do We Know? And the scientists weren't as forthcoming, but the paranormal guys are great. They were really generous with information and ideas, you know, and their own, like Joshua Warren teaching me about how he goes out and looks for ghosts and how he tries to use the scientific method and really be professional about it, and his own beliefs and how quantum physics apply to different types of ghosts.
Right.
Really generous.
I have to give you a little bit more praise about the book, because I've talked to a lot of people, you know, I'm doing this radio show now for quite a while, and most researchers kind of specialize and not to denigrate any researcher, but a lot of one person who believes in UFOs won't look at ghosts.
Exactly.
And if you believe in ghosts, well, you're just not interested in Bigfoot or anything. You know, and here you've taken this book and you've examined various fields, you know, and all the different fields of paranormal research and tied it to science. And I think it's your willingness to be open to these different subjects that is really makes this book a very strong book.
Well, thank you. And I'm interested in all that stuff. It's always been hard for me to specialize and focus because I like everything. So this is kind of my way of, you know, getting to break the rules a little bit.
Right, and they're connected.
They really are. I mean, I think UFOs and ghosts, even though they're not the same thing, they could be manifesting in similar ways. They could be involving similar types of, you know, the transference of energy or gravity or whatever, and just the fact that it's stuff that we don't have answers to. I think people should be open to any mystery.
Right. Well,
it's like another piece of the puzzle that completes the whole picture.
Exactly, and this is the missing piece, because so many people, you know, I can't tell you how many people I've interviewed think they've seen a ghost when it's really a UFO, or they think they've been abducted when in fact they had an out-of-body experience.
Isn't that amazing? And all the cross, you know, cross-referencing that goes on. And yeah, I mean, obviously there's stuff going on, and we don't quite know what it is yet, but I think we're getting a little bit closer.
Right. So are there ways to access these different dimensions, you think?
I kind of think people either know how to do it on their own or they don't, but I imagine that, you know, if you can get into deep meditation or some kind of altered state of consciousness, you certainly are going to be able to access other levels of reality. People have done it, and that just requires shifting your consciousness, sometimes just looking at something a little differently, just changing your perception. I mean, everybody's looked at those you know, those pictures where if you stare at it long enough or just stare beyond it, you see the image. And we can shift our own perception. It just takes the willingness to do it, practice, you know, getting into that real quiet state.
Right. And I've always kind of thought that there's an invisible duplicate energetic part to everything. And I've always thought that way.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, I mean, that's how I've experienced it. In reality, too.
Yeah, and David Baum talks about the implicate order, the explicate order, you know, the surface stuff that you see every day, and then what's just underneath the surface that's going on.
Right. So, Marie, this is your 30-something book?
Well, this is my second book that wasn't an assignment.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the inspirational books are done on assignment.
Okay.
So I consider this my second nonfiction book.
Are you working on any new ones?
I'm just finishing a book that I'm writing with my father that will be out in August called Super Volcano, the catastrophic event that changed the course of human history.
Oh, no way.
And it is so much fun to write, even though it's really creepy stuff. But basically, we're going to talk about super volcanoes, past and possibly future, including Yellowstone and another super volcano that could be even more dangerous.
Wow, that sounds so interesting.
And it's fun writing with my dad, too. He's a geophysicist, so he has the PhD.
Very, very exciting.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting. So we've just got like a minute or two left. Gosh, you've been an amazing guest.
Thanks.
What else can we haven't we covered or that do you think people should know or might want to know?
I think if they have had experiences, it's really important to report them, because one of the things I was told by all the paranormal researchers that I talked to is that one of the most important ways we're ever going to get answers to these questions is by having good data. And now with the internet, you can report experiences, you can talk about them, you can get the details down. And I think eventually the pattern is going to become very obvious.
Right. Well, I agree totally. And I will email you that article.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
Which I think you'll enjoy a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's our show tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest has been Marie D. Jones, who is the author of the amazing new book, Science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E, Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. I finished reading it just shortly before the show, and have been reading it actually all week, and really, really enjoyed it. And I think
thank you.
I think it's an excellent book, and I hope everyone out there goes straight out and buys it.
Well,
and,
thanks.
Your website is www.mariedjones.com. That's N-A-R-I-E, D. Jones. And you can get more information about the book and your other research there?
Absolutely. People can email me from the website, too, and I answer every email.
Oh, great. That's nice to hear. All right, folks. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, our guest will be Wilma Davidson. She's going to talk about spirit rescue, which sounds very interesting as well. Thank you all for listening. Have a great evening.